From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we go to Moscow to speak with Mark Sloboda. He's an independent analyst, a lecturer at Moscow State University on international affairs, and a frequent contributor here at CPR News. Mark, tell us what the response to the coronavirus looks like inside Moscow.
The situation in Moscow is quite predictably, because I was already saying this 2 months ago, but it's not good. If you want to backtrack just a little bit to how Russia, you know, your listeners probably know quite well how the U.S. and some European countries have responded to this crisis, the global pandemic of COVID-19. But you probably are not very well aware of the way the Western media reports on Russia, how Russia has handled it. Russia was actually the first country to close its border with China.
That's right.
That was in the very early days. And that was seen at the time as an unusually drastic measure, and unfriendly even was how it was reported in the Western press, with the country that Russia, of course, has excellent relations. And there were even the commentators, the usual, who always tried to find the light of day between China and Russia, talking, oh, that's the end of the Chinese-Russian alliance sort of thing, triumphantly crowing,
right.
if as wrongly as they are about everything.
Right.
But Russia has a long border with China. It's the right. longest border in the world. But it's a very sparsely populated border.
Right.
It's across the Amur River basin, most of it, which is in both countries. It's a not heavily populated, very wild area. The few places that there are some small cities outside of that basin. They're relatively small for both countries. The population on both sides of the border. And particularly in China's case, the border with Russia is quite removed, even internally, from the port area of Wuhan and Hubei province, where the outbreak of this was. So there aren't any reported cases of that border closed as quickly as it was being a source of infection to Russia, as far as we know from confirmed cases. So that was seen as a pretty strong measure. Then Russia instituted a very stringent quarantine of arrivals in the country from hotspots around the world, enforcing a self-quarantine and then contact tracing, keeping a tight eye on anyone who arrived in the country from China and then from other hotspots as they emerged. Russia actually has a very robust contact tracing practice and experience left over from the much better healthcare system of the Soviet Union that has carried through kind of, with momentum from
right.
that time.
Right.
So that all seemed to be working quite well. But then when the global epicenter of the outbreak shifted to Italy, Russia dropped the ball. Or the Kremlin, Putin, however you want to refer to it. Somebody dropped the ball. A lot of that is because Russia even with the government now, they pay much more attention to relations with the EU and attempts to improve relations with the EU, and are always cautious about anything that might further relations, weaken relations with the EU. Whereas, in comparison, you might almost say that relations with China are almost taken for granted in that way. And it has to be said that there is also a lot of Russian elite and business elite and the political elite that have very strong ties to many European countries, France, Spain, Italy. They have second houses there. They have villas. The question how much of it is corruption and how much of it is legitimate houses. They send their their kids to schools in the UK in extremely high numbers.
I mean, this is a phenomenon that goes back to the days of the kings and queens of Europe. The elite in Russia always had a section of it that looked westward. They were part and parcel, and wanted to be part and parcel of the royal families of Europe. Yep.
Absolutely. Western fetishizing, and that's carried on. Now, that said, I mean, it is also true that Putin has been trying to draw a remove between Russian officials and Europe for several years now, making them try to make them sell off property there, try to get them to bring their kids come home and so on and so on. But, you know, it still remains. It still remains. So, and because the EU countries are all connected with the open and common borders policies, Russia did not want to close the borders with Europe, and because of the potential diplomatic problems with all the countries of Europe that would cause, until it was too late. And Russia did not end up closing the borders with the EU until, I believe, it was the 31st of March.
Yeah.
At which point it was. I think that's the day. Whatever it was, we'll say if that's the exact date. I think so. It was definitely too late. And that is where Russia's infections came from. They came from Russians who had been in Europe, in Italy, in Spain, in the UK, and elsewhere, and they brought it back to Russia, and that's where the big outbreaks came from. And then after that, the Kremlin kind of dithered with a series of not fully committal half measures. Turkey has gone the route of not having an economic lockdown, as has Sweden. And I think that is the route that the Kremlin hoped to take, the actions it had taken so far would mean that it would be a relatively controlled and manageable outbreak. The numbers that Russia were seeing were considerably less in confirmed cases and deaths than Europe or the United States was experiencing. And then they started to tick up a little bit. And Putin declared, as Germany and all the other European countries were going into full lockdown, within a few days after that, Putin declared a one-week paid holiday. Where the whole country would just have an extra week of vacation, everyone but non-essential jobs would stay home, and you should stay in your homes. Right. Notice the phrasing there. But
right. The
Kremlin presented it as a holiday, and that is the way people took it.
Right.
There was not any type of proper self-distancing going on at all.
Party.
Then the numbers, continued to tick up. And then Putin declared another month of paid holiday. And at this point, the businesses in Russia started getting extremely worried. Small, medium, and big-sized businesses, and even more so for those who are privately employed, because with a loss of profits. Particularly in industries like tourism and restaurants, nightclubs, anything entertainment-wise, services, beauty salon, everything, right? They won't be making any income, but they're still expected to pay their employees.
Right.
There's one reading of that Putin is trying to make the rich pay for the crisis, essentially. But the truth is, of course, that many small and medium-sized businesses are not rich and, right. and do not have the funds on hand to pay their employees and will still instead go bankrupt, creating large numbers of unemployed people, which is exactly what we see happening in the United States now with some 17 million newly unemployed people, and that was already a week ago, probably much higher. Right. So that's a month-long holiday that was declared at the beginning of April. It continues, and Moscow was put into complete lockdown. And this is a pretty, on paper, a pretty tight lockdown. Essential jobs, of course, you know, medical, grocery stores, you know, police, these other things that are required, you know, for the country to run continue. But everyone else is supposed to stay inside. You are only allowed to leave your house for short trips to the nearest store, as little as possible, a grocery store to get food as little as possible, to walk your dog, to seek medical help, and that's about it. That is the only legitimate reasons for leaving your house. No exceptions for exercise or, you know, personal exercise or anything like that. Most of the rest of the country followed soon after that with Moscow. St. Peter's did, and then some of the other big cities and the big regions did. But Putin left that, much like in the U.S., left that up to the region's governors to decide based on their own incident rate of confirmed cases and deaths, how much they would shut down. Most of the country followed Moscow's into a complete lockdown, but not all of it, particularly in the Far East, where there's relatively few cases, the Altai and so on. And Russia's numbers continue to go up. They are still relatively small compared to Europe. As of taping, there is some 21,000 confirmed cases in the country. Right. And there are a couple hundred deaths. But these numbers have been increasing pretty well. We're up to some 2,744 cases today. And if you follow the trajectory that Moscow is on, Moscow is the epicenter of the outbreak in Russia, the same, perhaps even to a greater extent than New York is the outbreak center for the United States. And we're on that trajectory that looks very much like where Italy was 4 weeks ago, where New York was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I'm afraid, as I've been saying for a long time, that Russia's going to get very hard. And anecdotally, I can say that people, at least in the southern outskirts of Moscow, where I live, near a forest, the very southern limits of the metro zone, people have not been following the quarantine pretty much at all.
Right. Yep. Where you are, however,
woods, sunbathing, right. playing, exercising.
Right. Well, I mean, where you are, you have an apartment building with basically forest around it, woods.
Yes. Yes.
So it's not very densely populated, and you know, when people are concentrated inside their own apartments, and they go outside, and now you're in the great outdoors with, you know, acres and acres of trees and paths and such. It's like you know, the northern suburbs, maybe in around New York, the far northern suburbs. But in the towns, if you go into the towns now, for example, in Ossining, where I am, there's usually on Saturdays they have a farmer's market in the middle of the town, packed with people at this time of year already. The day before Easter, there were maybe five people were there, including the vendors. It's a remarkable change in the atmosphere is like that everywhere around here now. And does it feel like that when you go outside or go to the store? Does it feel different?
It just started, I think, to really feel different today. As of last week already, stores, like the local grocery store, which is the only store I've been to. We haven't left the house, my wife and I, other than to walk the dogs for 3 weeks, like many people in New York,
right.
You know.
Right.
But they are even the little local grocery store is required to have markings on the floor as the lead up to the register,
right.
That you're not supposed to stand any closer than this amount, you know, to keep social distancing and
yeah,
so
a meter
on.
And a half. Yeah.
But at the same time, even today, the store staff were not wearing masks, you know, or certainly not gloves or anything like that. So it's and today was the first day that I actually saw large numbers of people in my area wearing masks, you know, when they're going to the grocery store and so on. But a lot of that is probably due to Putin's recent statements. Just yesterday, he had a televised meeting with a number of the country's officials that are responsible, the medical and the bureaucratic officials who are responsible for overseeing the crisis. And he said that the situation is changing every day, and unfortunately not for the better. He warned of the need to prepare for complex and extraordinary circumstances as infections spread. We have a lot of problems, the president said. We don't have anything special to brag about, and we must certainly not relax. So that was kind of a sober and grim statement from you know, the president, who only you know, 3-4 weeks ago was saying that the situation looked under control in Russia. You know, things are rapidly following the suit of Western European countries and the United States at this point. There have been accusations in the Western press, I know, that talk, that the only way Russia could have had such low numbers is because they're fixing the results. They're not fully reporting cases.
Right.
Now, this is largely nonsense. Through a combination of some early good first steps that were followed by fumbles, and probably some luck, Russia just got hit later.
Right.
And Russia's numbers are not accurate in the same respect that no country's numbers are accurate.
Nobody's numbers are accurate.
Because no country, bar possibly Iceland, who has started a program, is doing the amount of testing required to determine the amount of asymptomatic carriers.
Right.
That may be some 30 to – or very mild cases as well, that may be some 30-40% of the whole cases. And just like in Russia, testing is not occurring. They're not doing testing unless you have severe symptoms that might require a hospitalization.
Right.
At least not up until the last week. They haven't been doing that. So, but that's the same everywhere, right? No country has the capability to test their entire nation.
Let me give you an idea.
No country has those resources.
Here in New York. New York has a population, New York State has a population of just shy of 20 million people. Today, Andy Cuomo was talking about, well, we've marshaled all these resources, we've got all these things coming in, we got all this help from the federal government, and we're hoping by next week we'll be in a position to test 10,000 people a day.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking 20 years to test the whole population at that scale.
Russia has actually been doing some fairly good amount of testing.
Very good. Yeah.
Compared to Europe and the United States, they were doing some pretty good amount of testing. I think it was a week ago or so ago, they were up to 35,000 tests a day. But Russia, of course, is a country of nearly half the population of the United States, some 140 odd million people spread out across the country. So it's impossible. And what's more, let's be clear, testing has very limited utility because it is a snapshot in time.
Right.
You go in, you get a test. It says negative, right? you're certified for one moment in time
right.
as being negative. What if on the way home you're using the metro and you get it?
The envelope with the test results, you know, whatever. Yes.
Medical staff, you know, should be being tested for COVID regularly,
right.
you know, if not every day in major hospitals and so on. And no country simply has the resources. So no numbers, countries' numbers are accurate. This not even China.
Right.
You know, if they're very extremely small countries, city states, you know, like Singapore and sparsely populated like Iceland, you might get a little closer. But you know, and the mayor of Moscow, who has been granted a high position overseeing the crisis as well, Sergei Sobyanin, he right. said as much some 3 weeks ago already. He said the likely numbers, these are our confirmed positive cases, but the actual numbers are, of course, much higher.
Right.
So it's not like Russia's making any attempt to hide that.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the uptick that we're seeing now, those accusations that Russia was fixing the numbers have rapidly, vanished, and it's turned more to a type of strange glee that Russia isn't ending up any better than we are in the current situation. There's
right.
there's a kind of Schadenfreude there, or something even more grim, I think,
yep.
From the many Western commentators and politicians.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's been such a hardcore, you know, propaganda effort against Russia for, well, forever, but, you know, since the 2016 election again, that it certainly would be dissonant for someone in the news to be reporting, you know, with sorrow on, you know, something
or sympathetically
or sympathy.
Yeah, God forbid anything
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
yeah. And yeah. the amount of propaganda against China right now is absolutely
amazing.
Insane.
It is. Yep.
The number of people, I saw polling numbers today of the number of Americans who blame China for this
yeah.
thing and
yeah.
believe China should be held responsible on both sides of the aisle. It's
yeah.
it's absolutely insane, and it shows how effective this campaign of misdirection by the Trump administration to try to find an enemy to blame for their own extremely bad handling of the crisis, even worse than Russia's, it needs to be said, although many European countries are the same, at least up to this point in time. But I want to make, you know, something people need to be clear that most people are looking at this because of the closure of national borders, which aren't yeah. as tight as some people think they are.
Right.
But this isn't ultimately, in the long term, a international problem. It is a global pandemic because no country can keep their borders closed forever.
Yeah.
And like I said, they're not as tight as you think they are
right.
when they say the borders are closed. I mean, trade is still going through, cargo, you know, flights, regular economic routes.
The birds are,
you know,
flying
to some extent
south.
Are still,
you know, everything happens. You got,
well,
birds,
I don't think,
you know?
the birds don't really matter, but there is, of course, transit of people back and forth.
All kinds
but
of stuff,
we, no matter, even if you defeat this thing at home, as China did, with a you know, some a measures that are called draconian, and the West can't even begin to fathom doing them. But they were effective. But even China is already getting hit around again with a second wave of infections coming from abroad. And in fact, they just had a large number of infected Chinese citizens returning from working or visiting Russia, who some 50 of them were infected the other day. They were infected here and went home to China and had to immediately be put into quarantine. But we are all only as safe, whatever our own countries do. Ultimately, we are only as safe as the control measures,
that's right.
the very worst control measures of the very weakest countries
that's right.
in the world.
Yep.
And when you take a look at Africa and South America and some Southeast countries, it hasn't really begun to hit there on the scale that it has in the
that's
West,
right.
primarily simply because they're not doing much testing. But it'll start to rip through those populations there. And I would be very, very surprised if you don't see states fall in the global south over this.
Yeah. You know, look at Yemen, Look at Syria. Look at the Sudan, South Sudan, and the DR Congo.
Sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah, where there's wars going on,
and where there is no amount of social privacy. So take a look at Bangladesh. India has attempted to put 3 billion people on complete lockdown. I don't even see how that is possible.
it's that many people. I mean, if they were standing a meter and a half, that's the measure they use in Russia right now, apart. I don't know. Wouldn't they take up the whole subcontinent?
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the, of course, the ability that China does with the organization and discipline of society due to their, however you want, authoritarian, totalitarian state. Whatever. Right now I'm happy with that exchange of the Habesi and the Leviathan for a state that can do what is necessary, has the political will to do what is necessary to keep its people, the majority of its people, safe in a situation like that. Yeah. Yeah. But it's certainly not Western European in the U.S. And Russia obviously doesn't have that type of authoritarian political decision-making or ability either, unfortunately.
Well, not only that, look at the density of population between China and Russia. Russia has these, like, miles of real estate where you don't have a team of people to do anything there. There's some caribou, or some reindeer and some fish, and that's about it. And whatever is going to spread across, whatever virus is going to trudge across the tundra, nobody's going to be able to stop it. It's an awful lot of, you're in charge of an awful lot of real estate there.
Yeah, Russia's population is highly urbanized. Yes. There's a much smaller rural and suburban population, right, with the possible exception of Moscow. But here we have Dacha land, where large numbers of Muscovites have kind of second homes, right, although they're often quite primitive. They're more like summer shacks, and a lot of people have gone to them from Moscow. Right. We don't have quite the same demographics, not spread out as much as the U.S. does. Russia's population is more urbanized and more centered on, apartments and so on. But then again, we also have, if you consider an apartment a house, 89%, some 89% of Russians are homeowners. So it's fairly high number. It's because of the Soviet Union. Everyone was granted the apartments. Some of them are quite small, of course. Right. We have a 3-bedroom apartment. It's considered, already upper middle class level. It was a legacy of how the Soviet Union, when it dissolved, what people were given out.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I'm guessing you're looking out 6 weeks, maybe, or thereabouts, assuming things go according to the assumptions now, and maybe things will start to get back to normal. What kind of, I see a lot of challenges for the U.S. government because they've shut the whole economy down, and you mentioned that so many businesses have gone out already. What kind of challenges do you think you're going to see Russian having to face, 6 weeks out or whatever, when they try to start it back up?
Well, of course, there's going to be political damage that the government is going to have to answer questions about the number of deaths and how they handled the crisis. But in relative terms, Russia's kind of middle of the pack, I would say. They've had some good measures and some terrible fumbles, and they end up kind of somewhere in the middle, I think, on a response level. Russia is lucky, compared to the United States, at least, and many, certainly more than Italy and many other European countries, it has a relatively high number of hospital beds and ventilators per capita. Yeah. So Russia's well equipped that way, but we're still also trying to keep up the numbers of personal protective equipment with some help from China. We're not out yet, but you know, some hospitals in the regions in Russia are already complaining that they're running out, and that they, you know, some parts of Russia may experience the same kind of lack of protective gear for doctors and nurses that you're seeing in the U.S. and the EU in a very short amount of time.
Okay, so we'll follow that up next week. Mark, sure. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your time, and stay close. Wash your hands.
Thanks, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.